some of the other things that we've talked about. We'll talk about patience and hope, and everybody can get around those ideas. But I wonder about the word mercy. Those of you who are still working, or maybe if you are retired and worked at one time, in your place of employment, is mercy often on the list of hireable traits or attributes? I'm guessing not. Most people look at merciful people as pretty weak, pretty wimpy, pretty unimportant, easy to manipulate, easy to get around. I mean, after all, in the work environment of America, who would you rather do business with, somebody who's merciful or someone who's not? Well, most of our places of business are run by pretty unmerciful people. When we frequent places of restaurants, like Kurt mentioned, places that we shop, any of those businesses, they're all run by people who, I don't know that mercy would be on the top of the list of, at least most of the time, when we're thinking of the concept. Mercy, it's a word we don't even really use outside of church buildings all that often, except for maybe in the court of law. And even then, our court systems aren't very merciful. There's a law, and you got to stick to the law. There's a letter of the law. And our prisons and jails are full of people who deserve mercy. But hey, the law is what the law is. And so Jesus Christ comes along and presents this puzzling concept of mercy. God established his church, has created a people, and asks of us to be merciful. Matter of fact, let's watch this video clip. I think it kind of highlights. There's a theologian known as Miyagi. The great theological classic, Karate Kid 2. I love that scene. So I got to set this up because not everybody is well-versed in Karate Kid as Toby is. So the Cobra Kai, they were the no-mercy guys, right? That was the dojo where that guy was in the first movie. It was all about him. No mercy, show your enemies no mercy. And there's this great scene where Miyagi has him right there and he's throwing his own words back in his face. And I love that he honks him on the nose, because I think that's what mercy usually looks like. It's so unexpected. It's so bizarre. It doesn't make sense to people that you just walk away shaking your head like, what was that? I mean, how often does Jesus do that, right? He honks him on the nose. Like, he does something and everybody walks away like, I don't know whether to be angry at that guy or upset or excited. I mean, they didn't know. Because mercy is unpredictable. And I think far too many Christians have lost sight of mercy. You know, as I've been thinking about this concept really all week, that's the thing that continues to go back in my mind. Mercy just sounds weird even to us as Christians. It sounds weird to our kids. And yet the verse that, the passage from Micah that Toby read earlier, that's what God desires of his people more than anything else. He wants you to be a part of a church. He wants you to be baptized. He wants you to follow him. But more than any of those things, he wants a people who are merciful. And so this morning, we're going to spend a couple minutes trying to figure out what exactly that even means. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Blessed are the merciful. It's something that's supposed to be a core part of who we are. The dictionary defines mercy as compassion or forbearance shown especially to an offender or of one subject to one's power. Mercy is typically someone who could do something relenting and saying, no. And in that sense of the word, we beg for mercy. But it also is a blessing that's an act of divine favor or compassion. When we ask God to have mercy on us, we're asking for compassion. We're asking for something that we can't do of ourselves. And there's a third definition that I think is especially insightful and maybe one that we'll pick up on especially today. A compassionate treatment of those in distress. A compassionate treatment of those in distress. And I suppose it's that kind of flavor of the word that led me to kind of put that word for this Sunday as we prepare for our work camp. By the way, next Sunday, the word is rest. That seemed to be fitting for the end of work camp. But for the beginning of work camp, this concept of mercy, listen to that again, a compassionate treatment of those in distress. This is the 13th year that we've had work camp. And I think when we started it all those years ago, we were largely kind of caught up in the notion of, you know, there are people in our community that we want to help. And that's obviously still a core part of what we're about. But as we've gotten older, as we've literally gotten older, and we've experienced a lot of homeowners and a lot of, you know, 13 years of doing this, I've kind of come to terms with the fact that really it's not about the homeowner as much as it is about bringing all of our teenagers and all of our families that come with us to paint on these houses. And it's about instilling the concept of mercy within us. Because I believe that mercy begins by stepping outside of ourselves. You're not merciful to somebody until you at least begin to fathom the concept of, I wonder what life is like for them. Because when we're judgmental, we don't give a rip about them. We just look at their actions, we see what they do, and we rid them off. But mercy doesn't allow us to do that. Mercy allows us to pause and just stop and consider their lives and their situation. Because how many times do you see this? And with social media, I think it's even more so. Everybody has all the answers for everybody else. Well, why don't they just do this? Well, why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just get a job? Why don't they just do this? Well, and then I find out, after growing older, that most people don't know anybody who's impoverished or who's a victim of whatever X, Y, and Z they may be solving the problem of. I mean, they don't know. They have the answers, but they don't actually know someone who's in that situation. And so I have to tell you, some of our houses are in Obetz, all the way on the south end of town. And so Dion and I were delivering ladders there on Friday, and we have a couple houses. I moved you, Kristen. I think it's where you're going to be. It's on the south side of Columbus, just off of Parsons Avenue. So Obetz, Parsons, kind of, if you know that area very well, we just came over to Parsons Avenue and drove up Parsons Avenue from the south end of Columbus. It's like 12 miles away, 15 miles away. And I don't know that there's a bigger cross-cultural experience that you can have than to do that. If you've never done that, I would suggest you do that, because you'll sit there and think, this is the same city I live in. We all mark in the box, we live in the Columbus, Ohio. But it's a completely different situation and setting. And one of the great things about, every time I get frustrated and you know, overwhelmed with ministry here at Alum Creek, which is, you know, once in a while, work camp kind of refreshes me. And one of the ways it refreshes me is it just takes me out of our comfort zone and our levels. And we get to go meet people who are in different situations. And some of the stories are funny, and some of them are weird, and some of them are whatever. But the thing that it has helped me in is it's helped me stop giving answers out to everybody and begin to develop a sense of mercy, a sense of empathy, a sense of just sitting down and listening to somebody. Not, you know, our culture kind of trains us to give answers and to be prepared to, instead, just listen. Because I don't know about you, but when I have difficulty, there's not a lot of things I'm really seeking answers for. Usually I just want somebody to listen to me talk. And a lot of times I just get it off my chest. No problems are solved, but it just feels like something spiritual has happened. And I think that's mercy. It's the mercy of empathy. It's the mercy of listening. And the problem I think our world runs into is everybody wants that, but nobody wants to give that. Everybody wants the listening ear. Everybody wants the empathetic friend. But how often are we the listener? How often are we the empathetic friend? I mean, think about it. How often do we kind of see the merciful drive inside of us and want to be that for someone? I believe that's what God is calling us to do and calling us to be when He asks us to be merciful. I think mercy is a disposition. It's a state of mind where you begin to see. It's almost like glasses that you literally put on yourself, on your eyes, and you begin to see the world differently. And all of a sudden, instead of seeing all the stuff you don't have and all the things that you're not able to do, you begin to realize all the things that you have that other people don't have, all the opportunities you've been afforded that other people haven't been afforded, all the mercy that's been bestowed upon you that others have not received. And it's like when you put those glasses on, and that's what Christ is. I think that's what baptism is. You receive mercy, and all of a sudden you look at everybody else differently. That's the heart of Christianity. That's why I'm saying we're wading into some deep waters today, because this is kind of life-changing stuff. In Luke chapter 19, when Jesus is kind of sitting there looking over Jerusalem, He weeps over the city. And I think He weeps over the city because He has those goggles of mercy on. He's wearing those goggles of mercy, and his heart is moved. How often are we weeping over our cities and communities? I mean, are we just overwhelmed with a feeling of man, they just need mercy? Because that's kind of where I've been led over the last several weeks as we prepare for this week, and just a lament for the difficulties of our wonderful city. We show mercy because we have been shown mercy. That's the point of empathy, realizing what God has done in us. We're always looking to change the world, and I think if we could just come to terms with that, that would probably come awfully close to changing the world. Like if we could just realize what God has done for us and then begin to live like that. Because at that point, our relationships with other people ought to be a lot better. Because what can they say to harm you when you just defer back to, God has saved me. I've done a lot more worse things to Him than this person is doing to me. And God has forgiven me. 1 Peter 2:10, that great verse, says, "Once you have not received mercy, but now you have receive mercy." What has God done for you? What has God done for you? Once you come to terms with that, you begin to see others differently. I think the heart of the message is captured in this parable from Luke chapter 18, beginning in verse 9. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told them this parable. Two men went into the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of everything that I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. If those are the two postures that are before us, then I would ask you the question, what is your posture as you come into worship? As you come before God, as you interact with each other, what is your posture? Because I think if we really are going to confess, probably more times than not, when we watch the news, when we see things that are going on in our city or our state or our country or in the world, we point fingers all around at everybody else, and I see it every day and hear it all the time at how terrible they are and how terrible other people are and how terrible our enemies are and how terrible the world is. And I don't ever hear anybody say, but man, I'm part of the problem. But man, I've got my own issues. That sounds a whole lot more like the Pharisee who said, thank God I'm not like them. I've heard some of us come awfully close to saying almost that. Thank God I'm not like them. Thank God we're not like them. There's a parable for that. Instead, the sinner tax collector stands afar, aware and acknowledged of his own sin and shortcomings, and is ashamed to even come in before God's presence, and just offers a feeble, weak prayer, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus tells this crowd, that is who God justified. That is the heart that God is looking for. And I don't know how we teach our children that, because I don't know how we teach ourselves that. It's still a process, ongoing process. But God is beckoning us to look at the world through his eyes of mercy, to show mercy, to capture a merciful heart, not a judgmental one, but a merciful one, a one that's quick to empathize, to quick to understand, to slow to judge, slow to condemn, always wanting to listen better, always wanting to understand more. This is gospel. This is what Jesus did. Romans 12 lists showing mercy as a spiritual gift. And all of us can probably think of a couple people who seem especially good at showing mercy. We probably have a longer list of people who are especially bad at it, but there's especially good folks. And Paul says, yeah, some people have that spiritual gift. And I think we should seek out those people to help us become more merciful. In Matthew 23:23, Jesus said, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, the smallest spices. You make sure you carve off 10% of those, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. Those are still important, but you should not have neglected the weightier matters of the law. The passage from Amos, from Micah that Toby read, it comes in the midst of the minor prophets. It's an Old Testament passage. And when we think of the Old Testament, we think of all the laws, right? All the laws, the giving laws, the sacrifice laws, all that stuff. And it's incredible that Micah would come along, inspired, and report the word of the Lord to the people and say, yeah, all that stuff's important, but way more important is justice, humility, mercy. In Matthew 9:13, Jesus kind of sums up all of this teaching, and he says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I don't know what the percentages are, but in church, I think we talk a lot more about sacrifice than we do mercy. And it may be at the heart of the challenge of being a Christian to somehow marry the idea that we come to church, we tithe, we do all the things that we think of as kind of institutional, but our hearts, our motivation, the big kind of tidal wave is mercy. Is acceptance and love. And so many people in our culture are just dying for love and acceptance and mercy. And the church, our church, should be a haven for that. It's no easy endeavor. Mercy is difficult. Being merciful is a challenge. It's not very sexy. It's kind of looked down upon in our culture. I showed that video clip because I love the contrast. Miyagi and the Cobra Kai guy, right? The sensei. And if you were to match them up side by side, the one that just we would assume is more successful would be the sensei, right? Like that's how you get places in our culture. That's how you make something of yourself. And Miyagi is this small, kind of quiet, humble guy. And those folks are often just step stools for somebody else to just climb upon. And I think it's the reason why we come together on Sundays to try to infect this in our minds, to get us to buy into that. This is the way of Christ. Humility, meekness, mercy. And so this week, as you head out, and those of you who will be hanging out with us all week, we'll talk more about this. Those of you who aren't able to be with us, as you're in your jobs this week, or your home, or wherever you might be, begin to wrestle with this question. How am I showing mercy to my neighbors and friends, to my enemies? How am I living the life of mercy? We could go on and on with Bible quotes about where Christ calls us to be merciful, how often he does, and on and on and on. But I don't want to belabor that because I think you all know the point. Now we're kind of to the next level of difficulty, which is how? How do we show mercy? How do we begin to see the world through God's eyes? Which I think is one of the things that it begins. I think a beginning step is to begin to pray to God to open our eyes and see the world the way that he does. Because all of a sudden, the people that we interact with, maybe at the bank, maybe at the restaurant, maybe at the fast food place, maybe at the mall, wherever we happen to go, and all of a sudden we'll begin to see the world in a new way. The person that you overhear speaking another language, maybe you'll begin to wonder and ask different questions, seeing them through the eyes of Christ and mercifully, instead of just cast aspersions, just ignoring them. Condemning him, judging him, whatever. Christ begins to instill in us a new way of seeing the world. A better way of seeing the world. It's the way of salvation. Elizabeth was baptized last week, and when you're baptized into Christ, you're losing your identity. You're marrying your identity with Christ, saying, I want to see the world the way that you see the world. And all of a sudden, your allegiance is strictly to him. He's the author of our salvation. The hope of our salvation, which is what we're going to sing about now. I'd enjoin you to join us in song, sing with us this final song before we have class here in a little bit. Stick around for classes and our Vacation Bible School meeting.